Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's going on this week?
Well, you know what term I really like has been coming up a lot for me lately? Grappling. I like the term grappling almost more than struggling, because struggling sounds like you're kind of tied by a rope and hanging off of something, but grappling feels a little more esoteric or a little more cerebral, that we're kind of in there in the deep of things grappling with issues.
You want me to change the card?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay.
Just at least for the next couple of weeks until I have another thought on it. But the reason that came to mind is because my husband's been grappling with a tough conversation he needs to have with someone, and we've been going back and forth. You know, he's written an email and then scrapped it and written notes down on a piece of paper to have a conversation on the phone and scrapped it. And we're just really trying to figure out the best way to have this sensitive conversation, trying to think about, if I say this, what might the reaction be? What might the consequences be? You know, he's really taking this thoughtful approach to try to have this conversation in a way that will retain the relationship but make change. And then at the same time, this week, my students in my class, I assign a journaling project for the entire quarter. They have to journal all quarter long, and we work on different ways of journaling, from prompts and just free writing and doing drawing. And just this week, a couple students talked about the profound impacts they're seeing from their journaling, which was really exciting, because not everyone loves journaling. Not everyone gets into it. So I was excited about that. And then, of course, I got caught up in this constant deluge of tweeting and, you know, posts being put up and thought out responses by those in power. And then I always am in awe, in not a good way, of the people who comment on articles and then get in an argument with other people who are commenting on the articles. Like, who has the time to do that? Because I barely have time to read the articles, let alone spend a portion of my day arguing with a stranger. And two, it does absolutely nothing for civil discourse or building relationships. And so when I stood back and thought about all those three things, I realized this overriding theme in all of them is this desire to get things off our chest. You know, this need to kind of release feelings or emotions or thoughts that we're having, and kind of based on this idea that it's healthy not to hold things in, you know, because we kind of believe that getting things off our chest is a way of maintaining our mental and physical health. But I think the speed at which things are happening in our society, in our culture, the ease of tweeting something or texting something or emailing something has made it far too easy to get things off of our chest. And instead of helping us to feel better and helping us to make progress in our health, we're not expressing ourselves in a way that heals. We're actually throwing our emotions out into the universe, out into the public landscape, out into our personal relationships, and in a lot of ways causing way more damage than good. It's too easy. It's too easy to just blurt something out and then let other people have to clean up the mess. And a lot of us, you know, believe that it's our right to speak our mind, or it's a way to connect with other people. I'll share my thoughts and feelings and we'll connect more deeply. Or we believe it's a way of getting some irksome feelings, right, out of the way. I just want to tell you that I'm annoyed by who you are, or make some comment about your looks. But those thoughtless blurts of word vomit end up having the unintended consequences of really harming not just the people that hear it, but ourselves. Because once you blurt something out there or type something or send it out, you have to be prepared then to deal with what blows back at you. And I don't think a lot of people are prepared for what comes back at them when they send out kind of their hate and vitriol into the world. So here's my question for you, Hank. What happened? At what point did we lose the art of temperance in our actions? You know, kind of slowing down, taking a beat, counting to 10, exploring our motivations for wanting to speak or get something off our chest, having our own inner dialogue. What might happen if I say this out loud? You know, going through this process before we speak, or the potential consequences of expressing our thoughts. because there's a place for getting to the heart of our inner story, but it's probably not supposed to be in the public forum that we've created right now. But I don't know how we get it back, and I don't know if people even realize how much damage they're doing to themselves psychically and physically by just sending out tweets or texts in the moment that they have the feeling. I mean, have you ever done that? Have you ever sent something out and had the remorse?
Probably, but not on a regular basis. And before the show, you asked me to think about things like tweets and texts, mm-hmm. but I didn't even think about the comments. And that's a whole nother ball of wax there with the anonymous comments. And I think, first of all, I don't think there's any going back just because it's technologically so easy. Mm-hmm. When you had to write a letter or type a letter on a piece of paper and put it in an envelope and put a stamp on it that cost you a little bit of money and wait 3 or 4 days knowing that the person wouldn't read it for a while, then you actually put some time into thought in it. And even email, which is more instantaneous, but still, you think about it, you have a chance to edit in your mind, sleep on it if it's an emotional issue. But something like a comment or a text or a tweet, it's just out there. And what makes the commenting even more insidious, I think, is the anonymous nature, because you can just say, beer lover 42, and nobody even knows who that is.
Well, I would know it was you. So.
And it doesn't matter.
No, I get it.
But yeah, so there's no repercussions. Mm-hmm. And it's also amazing how an article, from a legitimate news agency could be about something, and how fast the comments devolve into having nothing to do with the news article that you've just read. It just usually turns into a racist or some sort of hate-filled rant.
I know, and I wonder if the people who are typing these are getting any sort of benefit from them. Do they feel better afterwards? Because I know from my own experience, the things I've sent in haste in my life have caused a greater knot in my stomach than the thing that inspired me to write it in the first place. I have laid in bed on many an occasion going through something I might have written or sent in haste and wishing I could take it back. And so, yeah, it feels like things are happening faster and faster and faster, that people are responding more quickly, not sitting on things, reacting. This isn't the direction for the show, but I just even think about how quickly allegations of misconduct have come into the news, and then how quickly the house of cards, the domino effect, wipes out entire lives of people. And maybe it is well deserved, but boy, I would be really frightened if something I did was put into the public landscape for critiques. And to see the devastation of my life happen that quickly, it all is too much, too fast. And if this show's about maintaining our mental health and physical health and well-being, it feels like the slowing down and being able to sit with our feelings and sit with our thoughts before we react is an art that we need to reestablish in our lives, or a discipline we need to reestablish. And it's beautiful to be able to sit and mull over your thoughts. I mean, as I mentioned with my students, they are having incredible experiences. Not all of them, but a few of them are talking about how they've started writing at the beginning of the quarter, and they're looking back and realizing that they feel calmer. They feel more focused. They, take this time each day to kind of reflect on the day, and things are better. So that's why I thought today I would call in the expert, Dr. Lucia Capacchione. She is my friend, and she is the voice of journaling expertise and how we can use journaling, creative journaling, in many different ways to express those feelings and experiences that we're having in healthy and productive ways, and to make our lives more fulfilling. So that's what we're going to do today, is we're going to talk to Lucia, and we're going to invite you to be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. Remember, you can always find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts or through NPR One, or any way that you get your podcasts. And if you do subscribe to our podcast, leave us a note, because we always like to know how we're doing. So I look forward to this conversation, and we'll be back in a moment to chat with Lucia Capacchione.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came from you. I'm gonna write words oh so sweet. They're gonna knock me off of my feet. A lot of kisses on the bottom. I'll be glad I got 'em. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better. And close with love the way that you do.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And I'm happy today to have in the studio my friend Dr. Lucia Capocchioni, returning. Is this our third time, conversation?
Yeah.
But we need you today. We need your wisdom and your expertise. Lucia is an art therapist and an author of 20 creative journaling books. She created the discipline of creative journaling through her own experiences. And she's also currently a consultant and trainer utilizing creative journaling techniques in the classrooms, ages K through 12, and is having great success working in classrooms right here on the Central Coast. So I want to talk about first, for people who don't know, what is creative journaling and how did you create this outlet?
Well, I came to this to really save my life. I didn't know that it was going to save my life, but I had a very serious illness when I was about 35, and I had two careers. I was very busy as a single parent and just kind of overwhelmed with life, and my body broke down. So I was in bed for a summer, and doctors couldn't accurately diagnose it. But during that time, I started sort of transforming my artist sketchbooks, because I had been an artist, and at that time I was working in the child development field as well. And I started transforming those sketchbooks into a journal where I started to draw and write my innermost feelings in a very private way. And I knew that these would not be for public consumption. This was just for me. And it was so therapeutic. I felt so much better that I ended up just staying with that and going into therapy. And the combination of the journaling and the therapy healed me. And I later found out that it was a serious enough illness that I would have died if I hadn't found some way to deal with all the emotions inside. It was in the family of lupus.
But I imagine that there was a lot of medical interventions that had been unsuccessful before you turned to the journal.
Completely. And in fact, the thing that really, the straw that broke the camel's back was getting a call from the pharmacy that I shouldn't take the medication they gave me because they mixed my prescription up with someone else's. And I had already started taking it. And I had been taking a lot of other medications that were inappropriate and having side effects. And I had major side effects from this mistake. And that did it. I just said, you know, doctors are probably well-intended, but they really don't know what they're doing right now when it comes to me. So I had to ask myself what feels better, and the journaling made me feel better, and I just continued with that and then found a therapist through a personal referral, and the combination of that body-mind healing work really did it for me, and it enabled me to release all these emotions from 5 years of crisis and chaos and divorces and illness in the family and, you know, just a whole bunch of stuff for 5 years running. And it really allowed me to get all of that out onto the paper. And that was what healed me.
And it's interesting because what you're describing, we call stress pileup, that in all of our lives, we can handle some stress where bodies are made to deal with stress and kind of get through it and move on. But when you have what you describe, death, illness, divorce, financial stresses, it becomes a stress pileup and it has nowhere to go. Sure. So it's sat in your body. And so it's not uncommon to see things like lupus or shingles, mm-hmm. right? Those stress-related mm-hmm. diseases. But I think back at the time you're 35, no one was making any connection between mind and body.
Right. No, this was in the mid-70s, and you're absolutely correct. Very few people were talking about the emotional impact on the body of this buildup, as you say, pileup of stress. And that's exactly what was going on with me.
So did people think you were nuts when you said, look, talk therapy and my sketchbooks healed me. I mean, what was the response?
Well, I knew it was working and I shared it with a friend and she said, you're doing art therapy. And I said, what? I said, what's that? I thought that was occupational therapy. And she said, no, it's psychotherapy where you, instead of talking about your dreams or your unconscious, you draw it out. And then you have something to share with the therapist, or you could draw your dreams out, but it's all on paper, and then you can write about it. And that's what you're doing. And I said, yeah, that is what I'm doing. So she's the one that recommended that I consider it as a career. And I did eventually go into it. In fact, quite quickly after all this happened, I went into a master's program and got my degree in art therapy. Yeah.
And art therapy, for people who aren't familiar, is different than just creating art pieces.
Yes, yes. The end product is not the point. In art therapy, the process is the point. The process being, what am I putting on this paper? How do I feel about it? Oh, is there a voice saying, oh, you can't do art, you don't have any talent, blah, 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 blah. The great thing about art therapy and dance therapy and some of the other expressive therapies, it is guaranteed to put you head on, face-to-face with your inner critic. And that, to me, is the key of therapy. If we don't know how to deal with our inner critic, our lives are not going to work. Because if we don't deal with the inner critic, we let other people criticize us from outside. Or we project that critic out, and we send it out into the world, which is what's happening right now and all the tweeting that's going on and the cyber wars online. That's all the inner critic being sent outward. It does tremendous damage. There's so much cyberbullying going on. And in the work I do in schools, I hear about it and see it a lot. Yeah, it's just devastating.
So let's talk about kind of that creating of the first creative journal. What was your intention and how quickly did it grow to 20 different volumes?
Well, when I wrote my first book, it really was at the behest of my students. I was teaching at the YWCA in Santa Monica and also teaching child development classes at Santa Monica College. And I was using my students as guinea pigs for these journal activities that I had done for myself. And I want to know, does this work for others? So I tried it out and it did work. People were reversing illnesses. They were cleaning up 30-year chronic congestion of the sinus and bladder infections. And I was totally shocked, amazed. And this was even a deeper healing than I'd had because I hadn't had a chronic 30-year problem. But people were telling me about this. They're saying, do you realize what you're doing here? You should write a book. And they just kept bugging me until I wrote my first book.
Yeah. And what year was that?
I wrote my first book in 1977. It was published in 1980. And that's a long story about dealing with publishers. But I used my journal to work through all the frustration and the anger and the confusion about why wasn't this book getting published. We had a contract, et cetera, et cetera. So that really helped. And what I found with the journaling was that not only did it help me heal my body and my mind, but it also helped me to find my life's work and to define who I was as a person and what my inner voice was in my everyday life. So it had tremendous benefits, and it continues to have tremendous benefits. I think one of the most important lessons I learned was about boundaries and privacy and accountability on an emotional, social level. And I think we have definitely lost sight of that with all of the stuff that's going on online, especially. When I do this work in high schools, and I tell the students, and I've actually taught 10 classes as a pilot last year, when I tell the students, these journals are not going to be seen by anybody, not even your teacher. There's the box on the wall with a lock on it. You see the teacher put them away at the end of class, and these belong to you. And even then, when I give new prompts, a lot of the students will say, are you sure this is going to be private? Nobody's going to see it. They don't have a sense of privacy and that they have a right to privacy. And that's what we're teaching them in the classroom, that you have a right to privacy. And when they extrapolate from the privacy of the journal to the privacy of their bodies mm-hmm. and the boundaries they can have around their bodies, it's very significant because a lot of these young people have been sexually abused. They've been physically abused. And we are teaching them, no, that's not right. And you have a right to privacy and to boundaries around yourself and around your thoughts and your feelings. And you don't have to put it all out in public.
Well, and there's so much to this idea of identity. and that for a lot of people, they don't feel they have an identity unless it's reflected back to them through their public interactions online in whatever that way is. And journaling gives us a way to have an identity that is our own, right? We're writing, drawing, reflecting, and seeing it mirrored back in our own books and not through the responses of public critiques.
Exactly, exactly. Now, what we did in the class that I taught last semester was that, or last year, was that we went around the group and had kids actually stand up and brag about something they were good at. And it was hard for them to do because a lot of young people have no clue about anything good about themselves. They hear a lot of negativity and they believe it. And so we have to get them looking at the good stuff. And it was interesting. We were doing the bragging exercise, which I introduced. And then all of a sudden, one of the students said to me, you know, he didn't tell anybody about how good he is as a cook or as a musician. And so then I invented what I call telling on each other. But, you know, the word telling on each other is usually bad stuff. No, I said, all right, you're all going to tell on these people with good stuff that they aren't talking about. Things that you've observed, strengths they have, talents they have, skills, achievements, you know. And they did that. And it was amazing. The energy in the room just lifted. And we always applaud with a bragging exercise. So after they were able to get up and really say something good about themselves with confidence, they got a big applause. And the more confidence, the bigger the applause. So we really let them know it's okay to find good things in yourself and to speak about them.
Which is in some ways almost contradictory because I get the sense that what a lot of people are doing, young and old, are putting things out there on Facebook or Instagram or through their tweets as a way of trying to get positive feedback right. back. The intention is, I want people to tell me I'm okay or tell me I exist or tell me that I'm good. Mm-hmm. But the conversely, what's happening is that they're feeling drained or not unnoticed or they're comparing themselves to everyone else's posts. And so they're not getting the intended feedback.
Exactly.
Or even if they're getting good feedback, they're still so busy comparing themselves to everyone else's story, it doesn't sit anywhere.
Right, exactly. And that's really the purpose of the creative journal method, is to learn to love and care about and respect yourself. Mm-hmm. And to have that sense of inner knowing that you are a worthwhile human being and that your feelings count and that you count. And that can be done through the journaling method. All of my books are filled with journal prompts designed with that in mind. And the results, as you probably see with your students, I see it with my students of any age, that they come away from this experiencing a sense of self-worth that they did not have before. And that's what I got out of it. That's what saved my life. You know, I got to see, hey, it's okay to feel confused and angry and frustrated and all that stuff that I tried to put under the table or under the rug. It's okay to have those feelings. That doesn't make me a bad person. Those are human, normal feelings, and I need to get them out. But I need to get them out in a safe place that isn't hurting anybody else.
Exactly.
And that's the key. I think the problem now is that people are using the internet as a journal, and it doesn't have a place there. That this kind of private release and emotional dumping, so to speak, is private. It should be held private. And then when you're emotionally connected to other people, you don't have to dump all this garbage out.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Lucia Capocchione. And we're talking about the mental health and physical health benefits of creative journaling, getting things off our chest in healthy and productive ways. And at the top of the show, I talked about just how quickly people are to react with their emotions, that gut instinct. I'm going to send this text right back, or I'm going to, you know, get something online. I'm going to respond to this. Like this knee-jerk reactionary place that we seem to find ourselves in, that we all feel like our voice or our opinion is really important, or we have this overwhelming need to feel like our thoughts or opinions are important. That's one. And then number two, how quick we are to open ourselves up and expose ourselves with comments, whether they're positive or negative, and what are the the unintended consequences. So what do you think of both of those?
Well, I think the issue is that people's inner children are being unleashed.
Does that become too 70s to say inner child?
Well, I would call it the inner brat.
Okay.
Yeah, the inner brat has been unleashed in the collective unconscious, if you want to use that term.
Okay.
And it's happening from the top down. Mm-hmm. So you have these very childish, very immature, very emotionally reactive responses going out into the public. And you also have a lot of critics, and that's the bully. Mm-hmm. So the inner bully being projected out is doing huge damage. So both of those extremes, this childish, emotional, reactive part, and this very critical, very harsh judge of others. And so that's what's really causing the damage, I think.
Well, it's as if, again, that top-down idea, you know, we're told there should be no bullying. We have anti-bullying campaigns. We tell children how negative it is. But when you have a government that's bullying, when you have leaders that are bullying, it becomes very difficult to expect our children or even ourselves to behave otherwise. And that's what I also see is that as if people think, well, if they're going to talk that way, then I'm going to talk that way. And then the gloves come off. Right. And now it feels as if we've lost all personal control and personal responsibility in what we're putting out there. Yeah. So I guess the counter question would be then what do I do with all of this angst I feel, or this anger when someone's tweeting, or a text that makes me feel, or then what do I do with all of this that is bubbling inside of me?
And I understand. I take that to my journal. That's what I do with it. I just dump it out there. And then when I'm going to communicate with others, I try to do it in a way that takes into consideration what would the consequences. I mean, I believe in the golden rule. What were the consequences of this statement that I want to put into this email or, you know, any
text
other format?
Tweet, yeah.
What would the consequences of that be? How would others take it? You know, there's a real difference, as you know, as a psychologist, between sending an I message. This is how I felt when so and such happened. That's very different. That's not threatening. Than saying, you did this and you're no good, and, you know, calling people names. So we really need to try to get into the collective unconscious the notion of an I message versus a you message, of just talking about myself and how I'm reacting to something, as opposed to telling other people who they are or how they should behave or how they should feel. It's a world of difference. And we've known this for a very long time. You know, this started to be talked about in the 60s when the personal growth movement and human potential movement began. And there are lots of books written about this. A lot of us have had training in this as psychologists. That's what we teach our clients to do. But it needs to get out into the collective unconscious. That's why I'm working in the school districts now. I am dedicated to working with young people because they're asking the same question. Well, you're telling us not to bully, but look at these famous people that are bullying all the time. Look at where they got. They're rich. They're famous. You know, that's where bullying got them. Well, not exactly. You know, it isn't just bullying that got them there, but that's not the point. The point is, do you want to live a life that has integrity, and do you want to feel, you know, peaceful with yourself inside your heart
and
in your conscience?
But I think that's the challenge, because you and I start sounding a little old school with, like, let's take a breath, let's think about consequences, when what people are seeing of all ages is that if you do something outrageous or say something outrageous and people start to tune into what you're putting out there and you get more followers and then you get sponsors and then all of a sudden you blow up into some sort of celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's this almost war for our soul happening.
It is. Yeah.
Between this desire for notoriety and then not understanding the price that we're paying for putting ourselves out there until, in some ways, it's too late.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. I think we're talking about a battle for the souls, especially of our young people. Mm-hmm. They are really struggling with this. And I'm not talking about any kind of a religious belief. I'm just talking about some very basic human issues here that have to do with what is integrity, what's going to really make us happy inside. Is it all that external celebrity and fame and fortune, or is it feeling feeling that we are doing the right thing, that we're doing something that's humane, that's caring of others and ourselves. Those are the values we're talking about. That's what my journaling method is all about. It's about valuing yourself and valuing others, and knowing that all of that celebrity, these people who are rich and famous are not particularly happy. I know, because as a therapist in Los Angeles for many years, I worked with a lot of them. They were the most unhappy clients I had. They had lots of money and lots of fame and all of that stuff, but they were miserably unhappy, and a lot of them were physically ill. So we have to teach our young people that, you know, that's not the road to really feeling happy inside. What do you want, really?
And so creative journaling is that path that you've created and now have shared for the last 20 plus years with schools, with individuals. And I'm excited to talk more deeply about exactly what the creative journaling process is. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Lucia Capocchioni. We're talking about creative journaling. We're talking about what happens in the public landscape with tweets and Instagram and emails, and how quickly people throw their emotions out into the world and all of the firestorm that comes back. And how do we deal with that psychically? Are there healthier ways to process that feeling, those feelings that we have inside, without going to war, going to battle? And there's a part of me that feels like, you know, all of these social ills that we're struggling with are not going to be dealt with from the top down. There will not be legislation or legislators that mandate change, and then the culture in the country will be healed. It's going to be all of us, young and old, pulling back in, finding that sense of temperance or politeness, and processing our feelings and emotions outside of the public landscape, and then being able to engage with each other in more civil ways, civic ways. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this. 805-781-3875. Have you ever sent something out and instantly regretted it? Have you had experiences with journaling that you found profound or helpful? Or are you like a lot of my clients who know journaling would be good for you, but just can never quite get around to doing it? 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. We'll be back to take your calls. Or maybe we'll just continue.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came from you. I'm gonna write words, oh, so sweet, yeah. Lot of kisses on the bottom. I'll be glad I got them. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better. I'm close with love the way that you do. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm sitting with my guest, Lucia Capocchioni, the creator of creative journaling, self-created through personal experiences, and then is now a PhD and a master's in art therapy. A lot of letters behind your name. A lot of years of experience. So therapist to therapist, you and I know through James Pennebaker's work and all of these researchers that journaling has a profound positive impact on mental health and physical health. Why is it so hard to get our clients to actually do it? And how did you find a way to get people engaged?
Well, I kind of snuck in more recently. I have expanded into what I call the draw-it-yourself coloring book format. Because I noticed when I was on a book tour a couple of years ago that the minute I walked into these big bookstores, all I saw were tables and racks full of coloring books. And I kept thinking, you know, I need to be in this part of the bookstore, wherever these are being sold. And so I immediately called my publisher and said, you know, what about doing, you know, my work lends itself to this, but it's going to be a draw-it-yourself coloring book and writing, journaling.
And not following the lines and staying.
That's right. You have to draw your own pictures and images based on the prompts I give you, but then you write about it. So it's both writing and drawing. And my publisher loved the idea. I talked to the sales representative, and he said, oh, yeah, I can get behind this. I'll go in there and talk to them about it. You know, call a director. So the next thing I knew, I was writing, hello, this is your body talking, and drawing your stress away, two books. And we got them on the market last April, and I am very excited about this, because what I'm finding is the people who were nervous about keeping a journal in this format, they're kind of open to it, and they like the idea of drawing. Mm-hmm. And so the drawing part of it really kind of sucks them in, and then once they're in there, they're writing, because I have writing prompts. And the feedback I've been getting on these books has been fabulous. People go, oh, this is fun, you know. And the other problem about journaling and what kind of keeps people from doing it is they kind of think of it as homework, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a book and you have to write and all that. But what people are finding is that with this kind of drawing where they're actually scribbling their feelings out, they feel so much better right away, because both books start with that. That they go, oh, this is, there must be something to this. Mm-hmm. I just feel better. I just scribbled all my frustration and my anger and my fears out here on this paper, and I feel good. So I guess I'll go on to the next exercise and see what she has to say here. And that's what's kind of, you know, getting them in the door. And I'm really excited about that.
Well, and the idea, too, of more mindful or guided journaling, I think a blank book makes people feel incredibly
Absolutely.
Intimidated.
Oh, yeah.
And so you've created these guided journaling that lends itself to wanting to dive in. And just the covers of them makes me want to open them up
right.
and draw.
Yeah.
805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation today. And Susan, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a business online, and I have a website, and I also have an eBay store. And I notice that people think or relate to, there must be a person behind this website, and they're a little more polite. And the people who buy things from me on eBay totally go for the jugular half the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, they're not even reacting as if there's a person over here selling this item. You know, they're so mean and nasty. Mm-hmm. And it can be so brutal how they go about, you know, like, you didn't pick the right shipping method for my item or something. And, you know, they've made the mistake. So it can be very scary. But, you know, after having a day of that, then I had the next day, I had all kinds of really kind, complimentary people. Namely, you know, normally associated with the website, because they, you know, there's a personality of mine there, I guess, you know.
They see your
and
face.
Then, I noticed, well, you know, I focused on that brutal thing way longer than the four positive things I got, you know. So I really had to refocus myself a little bit and say, look, you're just giving that more attention than you gave the four positive things you got the next day. And so I wanted to kind of, you know, kind of balance that out a little bit. But the anonymity of the internet and my experience there, it can be extremely brutal, like, you know, like that. And it's just, it's good that I'm relatively psychologically healthy, because I see, wow, this person has a lot of misdirected anger. Wonder what's going on with them. You know, but I can usually slough it off unless I'm having a difficult day. And then I have to really talk to myself about it.
Yeah. Thank you, Susan. And that's a good point, that when we feel the attacks come at us through Twitters or texts or online anonymity, it gets in so deep that it takes a lot more positive reactions to counter that. I think what they statistically say, that it takes 5 positive encounters to negate 1 negative right. encounter. Right.
And that's where I encourage people to dialogue with themselves in the journal, because it's really our emotional self that gets hit by these assaults from outside. Mm-hmm. And so we need to talk to our heart or our hurt feelings or our inner child, if you will, and give it some love and support. And I suggest dialoguing. One of the characteristics of my method is using both hands.
Yeah, talk about that.
So I suggest using the dominant hand to write for the adult self, talking to the hurt feelings or to the heart that got hurt or to the inner child, and then letting the emotional part, the body part, or the inner child to write and draw and write with the non-dominant hand. And in that way, what we're doing is balancing the hemispheres of the brain. The rational part of us is dialoguing with the emotional part, accepting that it feels hurt, not putting it down for that vulnerability or the anger or frustration, whatever it's feeling. Because most people criticize themselves for having emotions. Mm-hmm. That's the problem here. And so by judging the emotions and not accepting them and being gentle with them, we are really on a slippery slope. And then what happens is if we're criticizing our own emotions, we'll criticize other people for having emotions. And so this inner dialogue really helps. This, to me, is the key of my method. It's what makes it different from all other journal methods. There are people doing art journaling. There are a lot of people doing writing journaling. But I'm the one that invented this whole idea of using both hands, both sides of the brain, and really learning to have that dialogue, you know, and let it's sort of like the left brain gets to know what the right brain feels. Yeah.
Well, and I'm listening to your description, and as a professional, I'm with you. It's like, yes, I get that. And the whole idea of the inner child and dialogue and the collective unconscious. But then I'm thinking of my husband and his friends or friends of ours who aren't in the mental health profession and wondering, like, how are they hearing this idea that my non-dominant hand is my inner child getting to speak? Is this going to entice them into doing this work, or is it going to make them feel like it's too wooey, yeah, right? Like too out there. And so how do you approach?
Well, you know, the most surprising experience I ever had in a workshop was I was asked to do a workshop for a group of lawyers. These were real hotshot lawyers in LA. And I was very nervous about it. I thought they're going to think exactly what you just said, that this is really woo-woo weird stuff. And I had them start out by scribbling with their non-dominant hand. And I want to tell you that all hell broke loose. I have never seen such a complete catharsis in a group. And I've worked with a lot of women who have, you know, it's pretty easy for them to get their emotions out. They have cultural approval to do that. But these guys were, I mean, it was unbelievable what happened. And then when they started writing with their non-dominant hand, they got some amazing insights into what was really bothering them in their lives. And a lot of them after that kept journals. They bought one of my books and they started working with it. And that shocked me. But I think it was because we started with the scribbling. And again, they felt so much better after scribbling the feelings out and knowing that I wasn't judging them for feeling angry or frustrated or any of the stuff they were carrying around inside. Some of them had had ulcers before. Mm-hmm. One of them had Crohn's disease. And he had struggled with the psychological aspects of that. And just, you know, feeling sickly and, you know, and he had to go through surgery. And it was amazing how they later told me that this method really helped them release a lot of physical stress and chronic illnesses that they had had. I stayed in touch with several of them for several years. And that group really blew my mind. But it was because they got some benefit right away by scribbling and then doing the writing later. So
it is something you have to have a little leap of faith into saying, all right, I've tried everything else.
Yeah.
I'm feeling lousy.
Right.
I have nothing to lose at this point, which is...
You know, when people get to me, the most common thing I get from my clients is I have tried everything, and they will give me a long list of therapies and 12-step programs they've been in, and they will just go on, and the books they've read and the authors they've read. And after about 3 or 4 sessions of working with me where I give them journal homework, they have to do it to work with me. Mm-hmm. They say, this is it. I'm not going to have to do any therapy after this unless I have a real crisis in my life. But this is a tool I can see. I could use this for the rest of my life.
And I noticed that you also always talk about the process coming together with the journaling and talk therapy that seem to be a helpful blend.
Yes.
So you can do this work on your own and have these moments of revelation, but it's important then to have a witness to that growth.
That's right. That's right. People don't get the same out of just using the books. There's no question. Or a lot of my readers are working with a therapist. They take the book to the therapist and they say, I'm doing this on my own, and they always get support from the therapist because therapists want to see their clients doing stuff on their own too. Mm-hmm. And so this is a maintenance tool, and the therapists know that. And they therapists, some of them write to me and say, wow, my client just moved so much more quickly through this stuff by using your method. Thank you very much. And some of them have come and taken training with me. So now they're teaching it, these therapists. So, you know, it's very exciting to see that. Now, one of the things I wanted to say is that the advantage of starting with drawing is that we can work with preschool children. And we have worked with preschool children, keeping a journal using drawing first. And they start by doing their drawing with a prompt, and then they tell an adult, an aide or a teacher or a parent or a counselor, what the drawing was about, what are they expressing, and then the adult can actually write on their journal page what they said before they learn to write. Then they can go back and see what they said when they do learn to read. It's very exciting to see that evolution with these preschoolers. They're starting keeping journals when they're 4 and 5 years old.
And the wonderful thing about working with children, of course, is that they heal very quickly.
Yes.
Because they're very open to healing. All of us are intended to be whole and healthy, but young children haven't added baggage.
Exactly.
And inner critics of themselves. So it's so fun to work with children, I imagine, to see just how quickly they respond. And
well,
grow.
Even in severe cases, I have a training program. I train professionals to do this work. It's called Creative Journal Expressive Arts. And I have a local woman who's an MFT working with the county mental health agency. She specializes in working with abused children and doing trauma-informed work. And she just graduated from my training, and she is raving about the results she's getting with this. She's also working with youth in the foster care system, teaching at Cuesta, and getting them ready to go out in the world using my books on career development, doing journal work. And she is just ecstatic about the results she's getting and about the potential for using this work with getting them, young people ready to go out and to have a life and a career. And it's just fabulous to see what she's doing. I am so excited about it.
You're listening to my guest, Lucia Capocchioni, talk about the benefits of creative journaling and all the different ways it can be used. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to join in on the conversation. So you have 20 books of creative journaling for all different age groups, mm-hmm. all different
stages of life.
Stages of
So
if people want to see your 20 different books and pick one that would be fun to try, how do they find them?
They can go to my website, luciac.com, L-U-C-I-A-C.com, and all of the books are listed there. And they can see the different uses. For instance, there's a creative journal for children. There's one for teens. There's one for parents. There's one for couples who are pregnant or want to get pregnant called Creating a Joyful Birth Experience. Some of these books are out of print. That one is. But I have them on my website. And, of course, they can always be gotten used online as well. But there are books for just every stage of development, including the work for children starting in the preschool level. And, of course, my first book, The Creative Journal, The Art of Finding Yourself, is a book that can be used starting in adolescence and going all the way through to seniors. You know. So there's something for everybody in the family and every stage of development and every age. I also have books on talent development that are really career preparation books. And, of course, my best-selling book is Recovery of Your Inner Child, which was my introduction for professionals to doing a consistent course, so to speak, of treatment with clients based on inner child, inner family work, which includes the protective parent within, the nurturing parent within, and the inner child, which is the physical and the emotional self.
And, you know, for people who aren't in the therapy profession or the mental health profession, or this isn't their first language, I don't know if everyone recognizes that when we experience things in our lives from every age, and we're not sure how to process the trauma, or we don't have time to process the trauma or the loss or the grief, it lands somewhere in our body. Right. And that results in headaches and stomach aches and back aches. And one of the things that's so impressive about expressive arts, whether it's creative journaling or art therapy or dance therapy, is that there's so much in our body that can only be expressed non-verbally. And although I'm a talk therapy person, I recognize limitations quite often to talk therapy, because we can use our language to deflect from and not have to deal with issues, you know, take conversations different ways. But when it comes to journaling or drawing or expressing our unconscious, we can't filter, and so much can be released. And I just think that's the thing that excites me the most about your work and about expressive arts therapy in general. And there, I have no reluctance as a therapist sending people in to do this kind of inner work, because I've never seen it do anything but bring up positive results.
Right. Well, and I think that what we call now trauma-informed therapeutic modalities are really embracing expressive arts, because the expressive arts therapies are very grounded in the body. In expressive arts, you are always doing something physical. You're dancing, you're making music, you're drawing, you're working with clay. So the body is very engaged, and the body carries the wisdom. It also carries the trauma. So the guidance and the wisdom can be found right in the place where the trauma has lodged itself. And that's what Hello, This Is Your Body Talking is all about. That is a method of drawing an outline of the body, coloring in the areas where there's any pain or discomfort, and then dialoguing with them using this right and left hand dominant, non-dominant hand method. And the results are unbelievable. The wisdom that comes out of the body, the information about where is this pain really coming from? This pain in the neck, what is it? Oh, it might be my boss. Maybe I need to get out of this job. Or maybe I need to confront the boss with something that's going on that I can't manage, and it's lodging itself into, as a pain in my neck. So when you discover what's causing this at an emotional level, then you can ask the body, and what do you want me to do about it? And the body will tell you.
Well, and it's interesting, because as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking, not only is the journaling fabulous for getting in touch with stress that we're having or things that are happening in our body or, you know, releasing trauma, but I also, going back to the original thesis of the show, is that journaling gives us a place to put emotions, things we're grappling with, that are better dealt with alone than putting them on our partner or out into the public or making ourselves vulnerable. That I think in our intimate relationships, we tend to put a lot into the dialogue with our partners, dumping a lot of our feelings and emotions, you know, in this effort to share or connect, that in some ways can actually make the relationship struggle.
That's right.
That if we're not understanding what's coming up for us or paying attention to the emotions that we're releasing, and we're expecting our partners to hold that can be really challenging for the relationship.
Right. What my focus right now is social emotional literacy. Now, social media has that title, is all about outer directed other people. And we need to balance that with emotional techniques like the journaling that brings us back to self. If we're all out there doing everything socially, we lose touch with who we are, how we feel, and what we want. And that's what's going on right now. And that's why, as I said, I'm so focused on working with youth. I want them to find out how they feel, who they are, and what they want, and to stay really focused on that. And that will give them a direction in life. It will give them a reason to get up in the morning. But if everything is about how others think of you, you are lost. You are totally lost. And I see that with a lot of young people.
Well, and it's interesting, because on my way into the station today, I heard a news release about a study that was done at San Diego State University looking at the depression levels of young girls and how they've spiked over the last 5 years, and no surprise, at the same time that social media use has spiked, and they see a direct correlation of time spent on their screens and their levels of depression. Mm-hmm. Anything under 2 hours a day seemed to not have a significant increase, but when you have kids that are on their phone 10, 15 hours a day, we're seeing huge spikes. So Tell me a little bit in our last couple of minutes of the work you're doing with the high schools and how you hope to translate that out.
Well, by introducing them to the journal and having them experience how emotionally liberating it is to get their feelings into a safe place that nobody else is going to read or look at. And this is revolutionary. To have a place in the school day where you do something for yourself that nobody else meddles with, they don't grade it, they don't criticize it, is absolutely revolutionary. These kids have a hard time believing when we say that. But let me add another thing. By creating that technique in the classroom, we're creating a safe atmosphere in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want kids to feel. We can't just talk about it. We can't lecture about it. You can't have a course in empathy. No. That's ridiculous.
Well, we think
but
we
you
can.
You can treat people empathetically and let them experience that environment. Safety, mean what you say, say what you mean. When you say there's no infringing on the journal and you follow up with the behavior that supports that, the kids believe you, and now we have trust. So it's about giving an example, leading by example, really, with young people and with anybody that you want to help or teach.
And so it sounds like what we're looking for is helping these young people find some self-control, some emotional safety, and this comfort within themselves. So they don't need external feedback to feel okay. And I think that's for every age group.
Yeah. And that starts with the atmosphere of the classroom. If the environment of the classroom doesn't reek empathy, understanding, and respect for privacy and for boundaries, both ways. Teachers have to set boundaries with students, but they also have to create a sense of trust, mutual trust and respect. And I'll tell you, young people really respond to it when you do that. I had 10 sessions with the high school class last year, and then I turned it over to the teacher who I was training, and it really paid off. We established respect and boundaries and empathy and openness and trust, and the results were phenomenal.
So we hope that if we model it while their children are young, they'll bring this into the public discourse when they get older.
Yeah.
Lucia, thank you for being my guest today. If you'd like to find out more about Lucia, her website is luciac.com. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on our Facebook page or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org and podcast us through Apple Podcasts or your NPR One. Thank you, as always, for supporting public radio, KCBX. We'll be back again next week to talk about Thanksgiving and explore those things that we're most thankful for.